Hello and welcome. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. It's the show where I review every single science fiction book as I read it, when I read it, and, you know, no more often or less often than that. So that's the set schedule, really, whenever I read a book. So if you want to know more about me or about the podcast itself or any of the books that I previously reviewed or anything like that, just check out sfbrp.com, check out the information page, check out the wiki, anything like that. So, last podcast I recorded on the road, I was in Kiel doing some shows up there. Now I went back to Berlin and performed on the main stage at the Berlin Juggling Festival, which was quite good fun, but I've been there 5 years in a row now, because that's where I live. Now I'm on holiday. Me and my girlfriend, we're off on the road down to Prague. We spent a few days in Prague, and now we're in a campsite in the middle of the Czech Republic, and we're going to go kayaking or canoeing or rafting or whatever we're going to do tomorrow morning. Pretty good. Anyway, because I've been very busy, and I've been reading a really, really chunky book, this podcast is a bit later, but next time, because I'm on holiday, I'm probably going to get through quite a few more books, and I've got a box full of books here in the camper van with me, ready to get through in the next few weeks, in the next 5 weeks or so of my holiday and summer tour. Anyway, the book that I've got now, that I'm going to review now, is by Buzz Aldrin and John Barnes, and it's called Encounter with Tiber. Bum, 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 written in, let me flick to the beginning of the book, 1996. So, the universe, the world of the book that this book is set in, is two time frames, I guess. One is 9,000 years ago, and it deals with aliens visiting Earth, and one is around about, like, 20th into the 21st century, mid-20th century, and it's about human space exploration of orbit and the Moon and Mars, and then finally a trip over to Alpha Centauri, where these previous aliens came from. The story is actually, well, let me just put it this way. It's set out in like a frame story. There's a historian on this trip in the middle to late part of the 21st century. And so she's on the way to Alpha Centauri, and she's going to write a few books to pass the time because she's not got a lot of stuff to do there. And one of the books she's going to write is a book about her relatives, her ancestors, I think it's her uncle and her grandfather who have both been like quite important astronauts in the 20th and 21st centuries. So she's going to write their stories, which is pretty cool. Also, she's going to write a translation of accounts of this alien race that came from Alpha Centauri over to Earth, and there was a few trips to alien, I was going to say manned, but two alien trips across this across from Alpha Centauri to the solar system, our solar system, and she's going to write up a translation of two of those journeys. Let me put it that way. So first up is a story of her relatives and their adventure into Earth orbit and up to like into a space shuttle and a spatial disaster, which is a really good part of the book, and a journey to the Moon. And these parts are obviously heavily influenced by Buzz Aldrin, and I think you can tell through this book that there have been two authors, and because it's really, really quite noticeable here. So this part of the book, when it's sort of like humans going into space, lots of really, really, really in-depth descriptions about, you know, safety procedures on the space flight here, how the space shuttle works, how to get to the Moon, what's it like to work on the Moon. And it's really good because you can see Buzz Aldrin hands-on, hands-on experience here, and that's all really quite good. Again, it gets a bit over the top sometimes because it goes on for like 4 pages on how they go up to the International Space Station and they've got to put this aerial up, this wire around it, and it just goes on for ages and ages and ages talking about, like, you know, how to use silver, plastic-covered silver ties to tie this on here, and how to move in zero gravity, which doesn't actually add anything to the story itself, but is mighty interesting, but, you know, like I say, it can drag a little bit in places. Also, along with all of that kind of stuff, all this, obviously, first-hand accounts of what it's like to be in space and on the Moon, which is pretty cool, is lots of kind of like basic science popularizing going on, very basic science education for the reader, which if you've ever been to a science class read more than 10 science fiction books, you'll know all of this anyway, because literally a whole 2 pages are taken up, or maybe a whole page is taken up just explaining Doppler shift, and I realise that like almost 3 pages are taken up explaining the Lagrange points, like L point L1, L2, L3, and 4 and 5, and how they, where they are around the Earth and the Moon, and how they can be used. And it's like, okay, we know all of this already. It's one of the, it's the same kind of problem that Carl Sagan's book suffered from, and I think this comes from like an expert, a scientist, like a real like top guy in their field, trying to write for not a science fiction reading public, but instead sort of like a general public. And us science fiction fans, we know all of this already, and it just gets in the way of the story. It just, you're reading along, it's really fast paced, and then you get to this like 2 pages worth of Lagrange points, and it just like stops it. And I think you should keep this kind of stuff, like these long explanations of really, really basic science, out of science fiction, and instead keep it, you know, keep the explorations of science at a higher, more cutting edge level, rather than, you know, what Doppler shift is. Anyway, I went off on quite a big one there. The story itself. So, a signal is received from Alpha Centauri, an alien signal, obviously from Alpha Centauri, obviously alien, and it shows that 9,000 years ago, these humans came over from a planet that orbits one of the stars in Alpha Centauri, and this planet is named by us humans as Tiber. So, Encounter with Tiber is, of course, where the name of the book comes from. It's not what the aliens call their own world, but it's what us humans call the alien world. So, not only did these missions come over from Alpha Centauri, they were sent over some encyclopedias a bit later, with the total knowledge of everything that this alien race knows was sent over. One was sent to the Moon and one was sent to Mars. And that's what the book's, this 21st century part of the book, is about. Go to the Moon and later go to Mars and find the encyclopedia so we can get all their technology, we can get their history, and find out what happened to them. So the next part, the sub-story within the frame story, if you will, is the first story of this alien journey from Alpha Centauri, and there's a historian, no, it's not so much a historian on the ship, but one of the characters there writes his history, writes his story about this trip coming over. And, like I say, this the historian on the human ship is doing a translation, one that's accessible to young people. So the reason why these aliens are coming over from Alpha Centauri, from Tiber, as I'll probably call it from now on, is that there's a large meteor storm, some other planet, rogue planet, came in, broke up and bombarded the planet, and it's going to be bombarded again and again and again over the next few thousand years, and they've got to like rescue the population. They look next door across to us, Earth solar system, and go, okay, we'll send someone over here to look if it's good enough to send our larger ship, our Ark ship, later to follow up in a few hundred years. And of course, when the first ship gets to Earth, they find humans there as a big surprise. Ooh, didn't know these were going to be here. And they set up their own little empire, and they enslave a human population. And the idea is that by the time the next ship comes over in a few hundred years with millions of or billions of people on it, there'll be a civilization of Tiberians just waiting there, ready to go. The thing is, as you're expecting, things go wrong. And I don't really want to spoil it any more than that. And then the next sub-story is another history written by a Tiberian alien 9,000 years ago about the next spaceship which was sent to Earth from Tiber to find out what went wrong with the first mission. And they get there, and of course, more things go wrong, and I don't want to spoil it too much. The final sub-story in the frame story is, like, it returns to the 21st century, and this follows another relative called Jason, of the historian, and he is another, like, very important astronaut back in the day, and it's his adventure and going into space and going up to Mars to find the encyclopedia buried in a crater on Mars. Pretty good. Overall, the story, though, is really unsatisfying. First of all, the premise, really unoriginal. Okay, a signal comes. Yeah, great. Aliens have visited Earth before and set up a civilization here. Yeah, okay, we know all this. We've read it before many, many times. The good thing about the story, like I said before, is the instance, the space shuttle disaster. Real good stuff there. Buzz Aldrin obviously knows exactly what he's talking about. And, of course, I read this before the last space shuttle disaster. So by reading about this, the one in the book, it actually, you sort of find out a lot about it. And, and it makes you appreciate the job and the planning and everything and the safety that goes into the space shuttle mission. So in that way, the kind of like science, space, technology popularizing, it worked for me because I really enjoyed that bit. But as soon as you cross to the Tiberian, the alien side of the story, I just switch off. The writing team have obviously gone for epic, but once again, epic does not just mean long. Because epic, a long book which is not epic is just tedious, and this book just gets tedious in the middle sections. So, as I said, I read the book before, And I just skipped over a note here. Yeah, the memorable parts of the book that I've read before that I really remember strongly are only the 21st century bit. All the alien stuff just passed me by. I didn't remember all of that. It just felt really long reading it this second time when I knew what was going to happen. But the 21st century bits are really, really good. Finally, because the structure is all over the place, it's not just because I read it before, it's because you find out at the beginning what's going to happen at the end. You know, at the end, the alien trip to Earth is a failure, but then the trip from Earth back towards Tiber, back towards Alpha Centauri, that is underway. So they obviously found the encyclopedia to find out that they failed and they got this technology from it. So it's a bit strange in that way. And normally, if you know the end of the book before this beginning, which happens many, many times, the journey has to be worth it. You know, the reading of the book has to be worth it, and in this book, the reading of the book just isn't worth it to get to the end when you already know what's going to happen. So the story, 2 out of 5 stars, I guess. But that's not overall. There's more stuff to talk about here, but I want to be quick because, again, I don't want this to be another 30-minute episode. So, usually in these reviews, I talk about the world, and then about the story, and then about the characters in the book itself. The thing is, I don't really have a lot to go on here because the characters are pretty much all interchangeable. The humans, no human really stands out as a real character above any of the others at all. The love interest, well, you just realise, of course, you're told beforehand that these people get married, and then you read the story, and it's like, yep, they get together, yep, that's great. But, of course, the humans are quite likeable, or likeable enough, no problem there at all. The thing is, the aliens are the least aliens I've ever read, if you understand me there. There's nothing alien about these aliens. They're entirely human in every single way, except that they have fur and 2 eyelids, but nothing, you know, nothing that's written there, you know, nothing about their culture influences them, nothing about their biology influences them anyway, not about their language or about their emotions or their desires and the motivation. Everything is exactly human. If a human was in that situation, they'd do exactly the same kind of things. It just happens if you've got humans dressed up as Wookiees, and these Wookiees just do human kind of things. Now, I moaned a bit about this, or something similar, I guess, back in episode number 13, maybe? I can't remember what it was. Learning the World by Ken MacLeod. I said the aliens seem a bit too human, and then the humans in that book seemed really alien, which I thought was a clever thing. In this book, there's nothing clever at all, because in Ken MacLeod's book, that the aliens, they spoke like humans, but their culture was different, their architecture was different, everything about them was different because they were a flying bat kind of thing. But in this book, Encounter with Tiber, everything is just so human, there's nothing different there at all. So, like I say, so the Tiberians, so human. Sorry, my girlfriend is just looking in through the window. Do you want to come in? Okay, she's moaning at me that I'm talking too long. Anyway, so here we go. Next note. Oh yeah, I didn't like any of the alien characters whatsoever because they're all nasty and petty and bit brutish in some ways. And they'd say one thing, one line, and then in the next page they'd do something completely different and just act like complete and utter bastards. And I just don't like that at all. Finally, in this case, a quick note here. Buzz Aldrin, been to the moon, obviously never been to Europe or anywhere else on Earth except the USA, because his portrayals of other, like, nationalities are so stereotypical, it's almost racist. If you read the bit at the beginning and you read the bit about the Italian astronomer, see if you can actually read that without physically cringing. Next up, technology. Gadgets and stuff. All the stuff in the 20th century, really, really good. Because Buzz Aldrin is talking about how do you get people into space? And that after a shuttle disaster, how does the America then bring about a new manned spaceflight technique? And that's pretty much what the world is going through now. In the book, it's talking about, oh, and Bert Rattan will get his plane and stick another plane on top and fly it really high and then refuel and then shoot another jet up into space and stuff. That's happening now. So all of that, really, really good stuff. Then again, it's like a two-book kind of thing. You cross onto the alien technology, and everything is just completely unbelievable and magical technology, just without any basis, well, seemingly without much basis in modern technology. The stuff in the 21st century in this book, because it's so based in like modern technology, it's pretty much Buzz Aldrin like riffing on what he thinks humans could do right now to get to the moon if we had the motivation to do it, or to get into space if we had the motivation to do it. And the alien stuff is just, well, it's just all over the place, just you know, generic space opera kind of things like that. Interstellar Travel, though, I think I found a flaw in this, which I didn't pick up the first time I read the book, only on the second reading. They go across, they use this lasers and mirrors and different techniques to accelerate, and they go in these acceleration tanks, a bit like the ones in Forever War that I reviewed last time, where they fill your body cavities with water and gel, and then you climb into a tank, and it doesn't matter how much compressed you get, you can survive up to like 20 gravities at acceleration. And also in this book, the aliens use this other technique of acceleration, which they can hold at one gravity all the way from Alpha Centauri across to the Earth system. And then at the other end, it's like, how do you slow down? Do you just turn around and face the laser in the other direction? No, what they do, they throw this loop out behind, which drags against interstellar dust and hydrogen. And it sounds plausible enough, but in the book, they don't actually talk about how much acceleration the people inside would be under to get all the way, like, to slow down that much. He says it's just the energy is just dissipated into heat. But I'm thinking, but the people inside would still feel that acceleration. And if you're going at 95% of the speed of light and you're only like one light month away from the Earth, that's a lot of acceleration they'll be coming over. And it's just skipped over, not just once, but three times in the book. So maybe I don't understand what's going on here, or maybe they just skipped it. I don't know. Maybe I just can't remember reading it, but literally three times in the book. I don't know. So maybe there's a flaw there. But otherwise, technology stuff, half good, half really, really bad. Next up, I guess, is the writing style. Let me talk a little bit about this, but not too long, because I don't want this to be too long again. So we have the frame story, third person, pretty readable. The main stories, these four main stories, though, are written in the first person, and this is a real problem, because you, as you're reading the book, or me, as I was reading the book, it's the book is set somewhere else except now. So while the narrator knows stuff, and the person that the person is narrating for, or the narrator is narrating for, they know it because they're reading it either later in the 21st century or 9,000 years ago, I don't know it. So the exposition is really, really clunky, and the technological explanations are all like crowbarred in there, mainly into conversations between characters, and this I really, really dislike. It's really, really painful to read. And then the exposition isn't just done in conversation, but huge parts of the story are also done in conversation as well, just characters talking to each other and at me as the reader. And it wouldn't be so bad if the dialogue was like brisk and readable, but it's just the opposite. It just clunks along, like I say, just clunk, 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 clunk. And John Barnes or Buzz Aldrin, whoever did this, it's certainly only one of them, I'll explain why in a minute, but it's like they've recorded a conversation just like I'm doing now, or just like they'd recorded something down into a dictaphone, and then they've got an intern just sort of like copy it down word for word verbatim. So every single statement, almost every sentence that any single one of any of the characters says has "well" or "you know" or "actually" or "I guess this" or "I think that." And it's just like in, like when you're talking like I'm now, if I say, you know this, it's just like a little verbal filler which helps the speaker speak, and it doesn't get in the way of when you listen to something. But when you're reading it, every single time it comes up, it just clunk, and you're just tripping over this stuff all the time. And the sentences are like, just, actually, I'll just open the book at random. This is it. Okay, here we go. Page 333. Okay, I'm not going to put anything in context here. Let me just see. Two characters talking to each other. "Well, the food's improving," Otis said. "Or maybe that's the standard evening meal. Either way, we apparently won't starve or die of thirst." The other character sighs. "I suppose, comparatively speaking, things are looking up." And it goes on. It's like, nobody would say, "I suppose, comparatively speaking, things are looking up." If you're going to say things are looking up in a kind of like ironic, sarcastic way, "Oh, we're not dying, things are looking up," you'd just say things are looking up. You wouldn't say, "I suppose, comparatively speaking, things are looking up." And it's just like that. And that's an example exactly at random all the way through. Every time anybody ever says anything to each other, it's like, "Well, I suppose that I think this and this and this and this and this and this." There's about 15 "ands" in every other sentence. It's really, really bad. And I said, it's not just one character who does this, because if it was just one character, it would be okay, because it'd be like something quirky, you know, like little character things, so you know who's talking. But every single person, if they're alien or human, or if they're male or female, or young, or different generations, one speaking in the 20th century, one speaking 9,000 years ago, one speaking in the late 21st century, they all have exactly the same voice and it's not a very good voice either. But one of the worst things is actually at one point, the different characters start taking on the narrator's voice. Like I said before, there's these bits of science education in there. And at one point, there's like this businessman called Sig, and he's just a businessman. But he suddenly becomes a science educator. He's actually in a business meeting. He's called together all these investors. He's looking for billions upon billions of dollars. And one person says to him the word deceleration. And he goes off on like a three quarters of a page rant about there's no such thing as deceleration. It's only something high school teachers use instead of the correct use, which would be acceleration. And it's like, nobody talks that way to anybody. Maybe a school teacher would talk that way to someone in a science class. But you would, if you're wanting to borrow $1 billion from someone, you don't start, like, catching them out with their wrong use of, like, technical language at all there. And the funny thing about it, which is why I actually want to mention this, is that later on in the book, the author of the book, the narrator, whoever you want to assign it to, actually uses the word decelerate when they should have used the word accelerate. They use it in the incorrect way, but one of the characters, so you can obviously tell there's two authors working here, and that they might have read each other's work, but again, in this book, you can't really tell. So, yeah, that's like some really bad, clunky stuff there as well. Finally, I guess, a little bit about the themes of the book, not really worth talking about, because there's no levels to this book, or not that I could see. I mean, there's some little clever hints here, at, like the author was thinking stuff that we should maybe think about, maybe a little bit about religion and how it was set up by aliens, you know, the person they meet is called Set and calls himself Ra or something like that, you know, think, oh, maybe there's some echoes there of previous religions, but no, nothing really here at all. Because it pretty much just says, knowledge and education, good. Space exploration, good. Slavery, oppression, bad. And I'm like, great, thanks for that, guys. Really, really needs to word read like 700 pages. How much is it anyway? How many pages is this book? We have, oh, it felt like 700 pages, 560 pages to get those messages across. The thing that really got to me is the lack of themes in this book. There's so many things that could have been talked about really easily and really briskly in this situation. Again, message from outer space. Aliens exist. What does that teach the world? What does that mean to the world? The world doesn't change at all. The only impact this signal has is that, like, okay, we need technology to find out more about it. Let's make some more technology. Oh, this technology has good side effects. Oh, look at that. Space technology is useful to the world. That's the only impact. It doesn't talk about how it impacts the community or the religions or the politics of the world at all. Nothing like that at all. And then, like, the big question. Okay, here's the thing that really gets to me about this book. Okay, so the galaxy. How many intelligent life forms are out there? We don't know. But here, within 5 light years and within 10,000 years of each other, 2 literally identical sets of cultures of things have not just evolved, but they've got to the same point in technology within 10,000 years of each other, less than 4 light years apart. What are the chances of that? Well, unless intelligent life is everywhere, unless this kind of bipedal brain up in the head kind of life is everywhere, and rocket technology is just one of the things that you just discover really easily in the course of things, there'll be aliens everywhere, but the thing is, there's aliens nowhere. And this is something I thought in this book, and I'm thinking, why didn't these scientist characters in this book think, okay, we're so close together, there's chances of that are, like, so close to zero, it doesn't even matter anymore. Let's turn our telescopes elsewhere and pick up other signals. And if there are no other signals, why aren't there any other signals? So that kind of thing really, really got to me. And it wasn't that it just wasn't explored. That question wasn't even asked in this book. And as a science fiction fan, I thought that was a lot, like, when the world was set up, it wasn't even mentioned in the book, but that was one of the main things I disliked about the galaxy or the world or the universe of this book. Just the improbability of it all. So overall, let's get to the rating, because I've been going on far too long already. Overall, stars, I'd say around about 2 stars out of 5. If it was just the near future space exploration kind of stuff, that's obviously Buzz Aldrin's little pet project there and advocating trips into space and what we can do it. Yeah, 4 stars. No problem about that. The 1 star would go to the alien bits and maybe 0 stars for the writing style and the conversation. So overall, 2 stars. Only read this book if you're a real fan of either Buzz, I almost called him Buzz Lightyear then, Buzz Aldrin or John Barnes. So yeah, next book. I've already read a little chunk of it, is called The Crucible of Time by John Brunner. I think I've read his Stand on Zanzibar, Stand with Zanzibar, Stand at Zanzibar, whatever it's called. But this is a book I've never read of his before, and I'm really enjoying it already. It's like, compared to Encounter with Tiber, an amazing read. It's like a massive work of literature compared to this. And I think that's pretty much what I need after this clunky big book. So, if you've got any comments, luke@juggler.net, email me. Any book suggestions, if you don't agree with my review of Buzz Aldrin and John Barnes' book, or if you agree completely and think I should have given it a lower star rating. The thing is, I can't give it a lower star rating because there's so much good stuff in it, but the good stuff is just so overwhelmed by the clunkiness. Anyway, go to the website, sfbrp.com, check out the wiki, check out the information page. You can leave any information for me there as well. Anyway, 25 minutes later, I've got to go. See you later.